Just become Muslim. They gonna hold you down. Become a Muslim. Do it. Study it. Now it's time for you to cross the line to Allah. Straight up. Y'all niggas laughing. I'm dead serious. Become Muslim, bro.
Now, we got him actually reading the Quran. Did he?
Yeah.
Sean Diddy Combs is facing dozens of new allegations of sexual assault in a series of lawsuits set to be filed.
Just got, I don't know, they have a certain name for it.
Nay Benz, police say you're a trigger puller. Police say you're a trigger puller. Is that true? What?
Brothers and sisters, we've all had loved ones that passed away. A mother, a father, a brother, a sister, a close family member. But one of the mercies of our deen is that with the right intention, we can go ahead and continue to do good deeds on our loved one's behalf. And what greater of a continuous good deed, sadaqa jariya, than investing on their behalf in the Deen Center, a masjid and mega dawah center that will benefit generations to come, inshallah. So click the link below, donate right now, may God Almighty Allah reward all of you.
This is the Deen Show.
Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum, Eddie.
Adnan, Frankie.
Welcome to Bosnia.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you for having me in your show. Yeah. I must say I'm a fan. I learned a lot watching you and your guests, and it's an honor to be part of it.
It's very nice to have you on the program. It's very interesting talking to you and learning more about you. It kind of has me thinking about my past and my transition, some of the things that you're going through, some of the things that, because you're a pretty well-known rapper here in Bosnia, and you started to, before COVID or during COVID, you started to ask the crucial question, what's the purpose of life? You started to explore. Tell us how you got to that position.
Exactly. Before COVID, I had some medical problems. I got the same problem that my father and my mother had, and that's high blood pressure. And if you work a lot, if you experience stress a lot, that can be dangerous at some time. And I ended up in a hospital, and I realized that I need to change the way I live, to start to live a little bit healthier, to change my food habits, my sleep habits, all that stuff. And so I started this road of change, and I should say that I grew up like a cultural Muslim, like most of the people here in Bosnia. I knew some basic stuff and basic information about Islam, but I was not really practicing it. And in this pre-corona time, I had like these medical problems, and I started to also to learn about meditation and stuff like that. So I started to meditate, and of course I have a lot of friends who are practicing Muslims, so I saw some connections between the meditations and the Muslim prayer, the Salah. Started to talk to them about them, and then I realized, okay, I need to learn more about it. And I started to learn about Islam a lot, to read some books. One I can mention maybe is Al-Qarni. It's a great author. That he was the first one that I started to explore and read, and learning about it, I realized that I have a very little knowledge about my faith. And when I started to explore it, I found out so much nice things, you know, especially in this book of Al-Qarni. I think it's
the book Don't Be Sad. It's called
Don't Be Sad, exactly. That's his bestseller, I believe. There were a lot of quotes from the Quran, and I was like, wow, this is so beautiful. I didn't even know that this is in the Quran. And even learning about it and reading about it helped me a lot to calm, and to, you know, I felt some, like, all this anxiety and these problems that I developed because of the blood pressure went away, or became, you know, I started to control it, a little bit. And I thought, if this is helping me already, just learning and reading about it, how would it be if I start practicing it and if I start actually to pray? So I printed out some surahs and, you know, started to pray reading it. And I realized right away the first few days that it's amazing. It's, I felt like my
chest expanding.
Don't feel this anxiety so more, and all these beautiful feelings that I guess every Muslim is familiar with, and he knows what I'm talking about. And that's basically the start. So I started to pray at the beginning, just one or two times a day, how much I can handle, and I'll find time. And then very quickly after that, I started to pray all the five times a day, and just started to read a lot of stuff about Islam. And that was the beginning of the journey, I would say.
Tell me this, before you got to that, were you, because define for our audience, when you talk about culturally Muslim, what do you mean by that? I understand what you're saying, but for people who are like, what does that mean?
Well, that means, you know, fasting a few days in Ramadan, stop drinking alcohol in Ramadan, but continuing after Ramadan again. Yeah. Don't eating pork, of course.
Yeah.
And a few times maybe Eid, going to the mosque with the family and stuff like that. But not actually praying, not, you know, not giving zakat, not doing all these other, you know, very important parts of our religion. So yeah, like I said, my late grandmother, she taught me the basics about Islam, and she, you know, while she was alive, we used to live together in a big house, and with her I used to fast during Ramadan, and that's basically it. Like I said, when I started to learn about Islam, to read, and then I realized how little I know, but actually, because, you know, I thought, okay, that's it, what my grandmother told me and what I, you know, see with my family and, you know, what I see on TV, but actually it's much, much deeper, of course. And yeah, I'm happy that I experienced these medical problems because they led me to becoming a better person.
So it was at that point that you started to, it triggered something to go ahead and to look deeper into what you were already sitting on, but just not, it was a treasure, but you weren't really exploring the treasure of Islam.
Yes, exactly.
Were you curious about any other religions? Did you look at, because in Bosnia you do have Catholics, Croatians, Serbs, Orthodox, were you, Buddhism, Hinduism, you were dabbling in some meditation and whatnot, can be attributed to like Buddhism and yoga and whatnot. Did you explore some of the other and do a comparative search at all?
That came later, actually.
Later?
Yeah, because at the beginning, I knew I'm a Muslim. I'm born in a Muslim family, so I started with Islam. And while learning about Islam, also I started to learn about other religions. So, for example, the Bible and in the Christianity and stuff like that. And while I was learning about Islam, started learning about it, I compared it.
Yes.
And I came to the conclusion that Islam is the right way, and that is my religion, and I should follow it. And yeah, that's basically it. Yeah.
Did you? I heard you saying at one point you were saying that before, when you were drinking and partying, and then, you know, people really weren't objecting at all, but then now you started to go towards prayer or whatnot, and now people are like, what's wrong with this guy?
Yes, I wrote a column for Al Jazeera here in Balkans, for their website, talking about my experience quitting alcohol. Yeah. And when I quit alcohol, that was also much before Corona and much before Islam, I realized that just physically I cannot take it anymore. It's too much. The day after, you know, it's very hard to recover, and so I realized why I'm doing this to myself. I'm just putting poison in my body, and I started by doing it like a small challenge. Like I said to myself, let's try 1 year without alcohol to see how I will feel, how my body will feel, how I'm mentally and physically will change. Will it change something? And I did that. And after 1 year, I was like sitting there and thinking, okay, what now? Should I now drink one and celebrate?
Yeah.
Or should I just continue not drinking? Because I felt the big difference, of course. I was much healthier, much, you know, all the benefits that came by a sober life, I felt them. And I was not like an alcoholic, like living on the street and having my first beer at 9 o'clock in the morning and shaking. I was just like, but I also, I would say that I was like a alcoholic, but on a lower scale maybe, you know, because there was no week passing that I didn't drink at one or two days in the week. So, yeah, To get back to your question, actually, I talk about it in this column. People started to look at me wrong, and to ask me, "Are you okay? What's going on? Are you going crazy because you stopped drinking?"
Yeah.
Because it's so deep in our society that drinking is normal and that everybody's doing it, and the one who's not doing it, he's like crazy. And yeah, that was something I experienced.
That's very interesting, because now you're saying that from before, when you're partying, when you're acting, you know how people can act when they're drunk, right? Or
yep.
when they're drinking, they can act like fools, whatnot. And
exactly.
then you can end up, you know, according to the World Health Organization, you got annually 3 million people die from alcohol.
Yes.
And they just, let's stick on this just for a second, because I mean, people look at, you've often heard this, like, you know, Islam is just a bunch of do's and don'ts. Everything is haram.
Yes.
There's just a few things. Like, for instance, what to drink is just what alcohol. Drink everything else.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
So if we just stick with this, it's fascinating to see that even they had a new study. I don't know if you've heard of this, that, you know, you've heard the saying that a glass
yeah.
of wine.
Yeah, it's good for the heart.
It's hard, but actually,
it's
now,
not, no.
it's not. They have exactly. a new study that came out that no amount of alcohol is actually good for you.
Exactly.
And you have a lot of, in America, conservative Christians and others who are abandoning alcohol. Very well-known, prominent names. So you look at it and you're like, wow, this is actually a blessing that I'm not one of those 3 million that could potentially die due to all of the underlying things that can happen.
Totally.
Drinking,
exactly.
not to talk about taking someone's life from drunk driving and whatnot. But you didn't have people coming to you talking about, now that's a good thing, you know, patting you on the back, but you start praying and now they're coming after you.
Well, yes, I mean, that also was like a little bit controversial, because, you know, as a rapper, they see you in a way, and for them you are like this guy, this persona, and now that changes too. So what's going on? But I must say that I had a lot of also support from my friends and my family. I mean, it's not like, you know, negative stuff. And I mean, the best thing helped my wife and my friends and my family realize that this is a positive change is the change they saw in me, in my behavior, in my, you know, health and everything. So they... My wife especially, she was a little bit scared when I started practicing Islam, because, you know, there are a lot of stereotypes.
All
she
the
was
misconceptions
like, is he now going to ISIS, to Syria or something like that? I mean, I can understand that too, because she married one guy and now this other guy comes here. But after a few months, she realized also, hey, this guy's getting a...
You're changing for the better.
Yeah, he's getting a better father, a better husband, everything, better neighbor. So it's a positive thing, and she was fully supporting me on that way. I don't even mention the health and what that did to my body and stuff. So yeah, I mean, that's something nobody can deny, because when they see you happier, healthier, and being a better person, that's the proof right there.
So you were saying earlier that you didn't even start implementing Islam, but you were studying Islam, you're already feeling better.
Exactly.
Now you're getting to implement Islam.
Yes.
The prescription that comes from the creator of the heavens and the earth, God Almighty Allah, is telling us to pray 5 times a day, minimum.
Yep.
Leave off certain things.
Yes.
So you're leaving off alcohol, you're starting to implement Salah, you end up making Hajj?
Umrah. Yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, while learning about it and starting to practicing it, I learned about Umrah. I didn't even know that Umrah is a thing. I just knew about Hajj.
Yeah.
And the perception was Hajj, that's what all people do. And when I realized, okay, there's an Umrah also, you can go whenever you like, you don't need to wait a special time in the year and stuff like that. So it was Corona, the lockdown was like loosening a little bit, so traveling became again possible. And I was like, as a musician, I didn't have any concerts, so I had a lot of free time. And God thanks, I had some money saved. So I said, okay, I wanna do Umrah. And I thought to myself, okay, listen, I traveled the world with music, went to America, went to Japan, Canada, Russia, all Europe. But this one trip that is very important for my identity, I didn't do. So let's do it now. And I learned what I have to do doing Umrah, and also I went there to experience it, you know, to visit Medina, Mecca, to see the culture, to see the people there. Of course, focusing mostly of my religious duty, but I also wanted to see, you know, where the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam was born and where he lived and stuff like that. So yeah, I did Umrah in 2022 or 21, I think, and it was a fantastic experience. I mean, the first day we arrived there, we prayed Fajr together, and then we went to the hotel, rest a little bit, and then I came for the noon prayer. I was alone, and I went in the masjid of the Prophet, and I was looking around, and I was amazed, and a lot of emotions came over me, and I started to pray, and then I realized my grandma, that, and our talks, and when how she taught me about Islam, and that was so emotional. I started to cry, and that was like, I realized why one salah in this masjid is 1,000 times bigger and much worth than at home. So it's amazing experience. I would recommend it to everybody, and I hope one day, inshallah, to do it again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tell me this: you are aware of what's going on in America with one of the most famous rappers right now, P. Diddy?
Yeah,
Combs?
Yeah.
Sean Diddy Combs is facing dozens of new allegations of sexual assault in a series of lawsuits set to be filed. At a news conference today, Texas-based attorney Tony Busby said that he's representing 120 accusers with allegations against the music mogul that happened over 20 years. Busby said that the new accusers include men and women, and they come from more than 25 states, including Florida. Busby claims that his clients will mostly face abuse during after parties and auditions. The lawyer said that he's had more than 3,000 people come forward to his office with accusations against Combs, and that he plans to begin filing lawsuits in various states within the next 30 days. Now, today, Combs' attorney said that, quote, he cannot address every meritless allegation in what has become a reckless media circus. That said, Mr. Combs emphatically and categorically denies as false and defamatory any claim that he sexually abused anyone, including minors, end quote. Diddy has pleaded not guilty to the federal charges.
Yes.
Are you familiar with everything that's unpacked? Packaging?
Yes.
What are your thoughts on that?
It's awful. I mean, thank God he got caught, and I didn't like the guy anyway. There was something fishy about him all the time. I mean, I was a big Tupac fan.
Yeah.
And you know, also there was
a beef between
them. Yeah, right? Exactly.
So P. Diddy and with Tupac.
Yes. Tupac was one side, and P. Diddy and Biggie were East Coast. And
who was East Coast? Biggie Smalls,
P. Diddy,
yeah, and some, then they're West Coast.
And West Coast is Tupac and Snoop Dogg and Dr. Dre. That was the beef in the 90s. So, and since then, I didn't like the guy.
Yeah.
And there's also rumors that he is guilty, that Tupac got shot. He paid some guys to do it. That's. I hope that he will also answer for that, that he will get a trial for that. Even, I mean, it's a lot of years, you know, went by, but, and the guys, I mean, I thank God that he got caught, and I hope he will end up in prison for the rest of his life.
We can get a Bosnian perspective on the whole issue, and I think because, you know, a lot of youth, they idolize people like this.
Yes.
And now looking at his life, and he had the whole world in front of his, in his arms, in his hands, everything. I mean, what could the guy not have? Yeah. I mean, isn't he a billionaire?
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
He did, he right?
Yeah, right. I mean, he has all the money in the world. I mean, his kids didn't have to worry about it. But now the situation changes, and he's in a prison cell, and I think that will give him a lot of time to think. And I mean, I of course, we all know that this music industry and Hollywood and America especially, this is, there are so much wrong things going on, and so much negative, you know, haram stuff, and promoting some just wrong values.
Yeah.
In Bosnia or in Balkan, it's different. You know, we have also artists like that who are like promoting wrong values. I was one of them. You know, years ago, I also have some songs which I'm not proud of, and I would like, if it would be possible, I would change it, but of course it's not possible. I was a young kid then, I was dumb and, you know, thinking some different ways. But Balkan is is not like America. You know, we have also our issues. For example, if I should talk about and promote to tell the viewers about my music, I would say it's more like a conscious rap. It's often talked about problems in Balkans and Bosnia, and it's changed, of course, after after Umrah and after this Islam, accepting Islam, and I also started to talk about some different things. I also talk about my experience learning about and changing, you know, Islam. But this is, I mean, it's satisfying to see that people like that still can get caught, because when you think about powerful people, you think they're untouchable.
Yeah.
And it's good to see that there's some, you know, they still can be, you know, touched and still will answer for their crimes.
They're comparing it almost to, like, you know, the Epstein. You know, you heard of Epstein?
Yes, of course.
The island, was on the, from one angle, so he now... P. Diddy, Puff Daddy, from the music angle.
Yes.
And then I had a chance, alhamdulillah, to interview, because you mentioned Tupac, to Muta from the Outlaws.
Yes, and yes, you see, I watched that.
Yeah, someone comes Beautiful. Out like him, and he's also someone who is in that lifestyle, and talking about now the same thing you're talking about. How's he's experiencing what the money couldn't buy him, the fame couldn't buy him. Then you have also people like Loon, who was with the other side.
Yes, so you yes, had exactly.
But we're talking about West Side, East Side. So really the only hope at the end of the day for Puff Daddy, or what does he go now? Sean Combs? What's his
name? I don't know and I don't care.
Yeah.
The one thing I would say, I mean, I was never rich like American rappers. But even in my most successful years, when I had like great projects, great tours, earned money, and, you know, got everything I wanted, even then I felt some emptiness here. And I didn't know why and why it still doesn't make me happy. But, you know, now as a Muslim, I realized why I wasn't feeling this happiness, and why I was feeling empty here, because I didn't have the deen. I was not a Muslim. I was not believing in God. And today I still do my music, maybe not that successful like few years before, but I feel happier. I feel much, much, much happier and satisfied, and this emptiness is gone.
And you're just actually beginning now, because it's only been, what, a few years?
Yeah, three years, yeah.
Yeah. So this is very important. This is hearing from people like yourself, and when we bring up some of these celebrities, some of these people like that, I think it's better that we discuss it, and then we can go ahead and unpackage the stuff, because what happens, percentage-wise, the youth, I mean, how many, like 80-90% or more are really engrossed into this culture and following people, if not this person, the people under him, his record label, listening to much of the filth that's out there that's promoting promiscuity, drugs, alcohol. You know, they even had this rap I was watching. It just got, I don't know, they have a certain name for it.
Nay Benz, police say you're a trigger puller. Police say you're a trigger puller. Is that true?
What?
Police say you're a trigger puller. Is that
true? Where they're actually gunning down people in New York City.
Their mission? Stopping the reign of terror caused by teens, young men, and a few women who engage in running gun battles with their opposition or ops at all hours of the day and night, no matter who's in the way, right in their own community.
It's almost like they were competing with each other to see who could shoot more times.
For no good reason. Investigators say the hatred is fueled by inflammatory disses about murdered ops and drill raps posted on social media. That's aspiring drill rapper Nay Benz, who police say is one of the gang leaders. The average age of the case subjects is 20. Teen girls are trigger pullers too, like the shooter in this video, says Deputy Inspector Craig Edelman.
They're shooting at each other with a yellow school bus filled with kids in between them.
They are absolutely firing bullets without remorse or regret and without regard of anybody that's around.
There's a certain term for it. Have you heard of it?
No.
And they're trying to outdo each other.
Okay.
And I forgot the name for it, but it's literally where they're going, and then this rapper, and then he's talking about what he's going to. Then he goes up, and then people imitate him. And they go gun down, shoot down this person. It's like just out of control. Yeah.
Another local rapper is dead.
Late last night, officers responded to calls of shots fired.
Violence that has already claimed the lives of too many. It's immensely popular, hard-hitting, and the lyrics are provocative.
What is drill?
In layman's terms, it's like a sub-genre of hip-hop, right? The dissing is what established, oh, this is a drill record. They're dissing each other, they're calling each other's names out.
The term drill was coined by the late rapper Pac-Man. What exactly defines drill is up for debate. But everyone agrees that the drill in drill music is all about one thing: violence.
Yeah, that's really. I mean, I don't know exactly what, but I can imagine, and I can.
So then I relate and I say, man, this is. I was listening to this stuff. You know, I was that lifestyle, right? It was something that you gravitate towards. You want to be like the stars. You want to be like the P Daddies. But and then they're having these freak show parties, right? Yes. You got everybody in Hollywood. Yes. Is now they have like these tapes and whatnot's going to come out.
They're scared about
it. They're scared about it. Yes. So the point here is you have two ways. You have the way that people like Muta, Napoleon, chose, Loon. He had an interesting quote when I interviewed him. He said, "We were paying for the disease while the cure is free." And that cure now,
beautiful,
you're upon this also.
Yes.
Or you can be in line trying to get to the party, the freak show party.
Yes.
But all that ends, doesn't it? It's like chasing those fleeting enjoyments. Let's talk about that.
It's like the hamster who runs in a circle, you know?
Yeah.
There's no end. I mean, if you earn your first million, then you want your second or your tenth. And that it's just, you know, like I said, this hamster, and it's... I'm just happy for the people who realize that.
That's the point.
If they jump out.
You're like a dog chasing your tail, a hamster in that wheel. You just keep going. And it's like, you know who said we were supposed to have, inshallah, he comes through. I have a good friend of mine who's been talking with him. Right now they're in Dubai with Dan Brazerian. You heard of him?
Yes, I heard of him.
He's like the new Hugh Hefner of our time. But the good news is for the last year, he hasn't been posting some of that stuff from the past.
Yes.
He's exploring. He compared this lifestyle. He says a dark hole, right? And this is a man who's... He's got everything, right?
Yep.
But now we got him actually reading the Quran. He's coming to on his own accord. I think his good friend, a whole family accepted Islam. A whole family. They all accepted Islam. And now he's contemplating, thinking. He's in Dubai. He might actually... We're waiting to hear back. He's supposed to come to Bosnia. Waiting to hear back. But you got people like this who lived a life of debauchery, had everything.
Yes.
Like the P. Diddy's, but one's going in that direction, others are exploring, and they come to where you've come
to. I don't know. I also talked about it in a few interviews. It's something also with the age. When I started to learn about and practice Islam, I was 39, 40. Yeah. Now I'm now 42. And it's also something, you know, when you reach 40s, it's like... you mature spiritually and you're ready to receive the message and you're ready to explore this. And I mean, the Quran was released to the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam also when he was 40, so it has something to do with this age. And also, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I see some awakening going on.
Yeah,
a lot of people, you know, start to learn about religion, about Islam. And I don't know if it's because I'm now fresh into it and I see it and I didn't see it before, but maybe you've been you're longer in this and you'll see that. I think that something is, you know, going on, some awakening, some people coming to Islam.
We're seeing a lot of Americans in America with everything that's happening in Gaza right now.
Yeah.
And the masks are coming off. People are starting to realize they've been lied to. They're questioning the money that's funding what's happening now, this oppression against innocent human beings. So you got people like Dan Brazerian who are speaking out, other people, conservative Christians, and just human beings in general who are human at the end of the day. And they're seeing what's happening. And you can tell us now that something similar happened here where we're at, where we're sitting right here in Bosnia. Yes. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, sure. I was a young kid. I was 10 when the war started, and I moved to Germany quickly with my family. But of course, I had a lot of family members in Sarajevo, in Tuzla, in Bielina, who also ended up in concentration camps, and they were in the army fighting in the war. So I witnessed this through them and through their stories. but it was similar like now happening in Gaza. We all remember this quote after the Holocaust when the people said never again.
Yes.
And then it happened again in Bosnia or in Croatia.
Never again is not supposed to be just for a certain people, for anyone.
Exactly, of course. I mean, and especially if you talk about Europe. I mean, Europe is this like continent where prosperity and where everybody's, you know, living nice and no wars in Europe anymore. And then you have it happening in Croatia, starting in Croatia, coming Bosnia, then Kosovo. Now we have it in Ukraine. So never again, but it happens again. And now Gaza was they have wars since Israel was founded. So I mean, it's a hypocrisy. I mean,
hypocrisy,
I can see
time, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like it's supposed to be never again for everybody, but it seems like it's never again just for some certain people, you know. And I mean, I see a lot of similarities between Bosnia and Gaza, and we had a lot of protests here in Sarajevo in Bosnia for Gaza, a lot of fundraisers, and people are ready to help and willing to help, because even if they, you know, we're not the richest country, but still we know how it is and how it feels, so we are always ready to help when it's needed. And I just pray to God that this stops soon and that the suffering of the people ends. And I mean, all I can do is talk about it. I'm right now doing also a song for Gaza with a Croatian rapper that will come out soon, and you know, to support all this protest, to donate money, and you know, to build some pressure towards our politicians, and you know, to do whatever is he's also a very, very successful rapper who did I think the second song for Gaza. And you suddenly realize who's who. And I was not a big fan of Macklemore before, but now he got my respect.
Macklemore.
He is also a great rapper from America. And that's the point where you see who got the courage, who's ready to speak out, to tell the truth. And yeah, those people will always have my respect. And I also see it as my duty to talk about that stuff. My last album, Manifest, there was a song, it's called Identity, of course, where we mention the conflict in Gaza, in Palestine, and the hypocrisy that we talked about, never again, and then Ukraine and stuff like that. So for me, as an artist, I see it as my duty and as a, how should I put this? I mean, good art always talks about people. I don't care if it's music or movie or art, painting, whatever. I mean, the duty of an artist is to talk about the problems. I mean, rap started as a protest for the people in the ghettos in America, in New York. It talked about racism. It talked about, you know, social problems and stuff like that. So when I, as a kid, started to listen to that music, I realized, okay, if I ever gonna do a song like that, so my duty is to talk about the problems in my country, in my city, in, you know, and of course globally. So yeah,
I mean, this is for people to reflect when you think about your life, and you think about like when you had this situation happen with your health. I'm sure you're thinking about, what if I die tomorrow, right?
Of course.
Life is very short. And now you look at someone, going back to Ashan P. Diddy Combs, all of the money that one can have, he's sitting literally in a jail cell. That money can't get him out. He might spend the rest of his life behind bars. At the end, what's it worth? If you just live for satisfying your desire, because that's what it was about. It was just about how much more at the freak shows, how much more of an extreme you can go to, right? So this is something for the youth, the young, the old, to really contemplate. Is really, it's just, I love when I talk to people like yourself who are a part of that world, and now you're coming to the realization that there's a purpose. You start to look into Islam, and now you're starting to live it, and you're seeing the benefits, while some people are still trying to imitate the Tupacs or the whoever is out there of the rappers. You can see where, at the end of the day, where that ends up, you know?
Yes. I mean, again, I'm just happy that I realized that because a lot of people will never realize it and will die and not knowing and not finding out the truth. And I mean, that's also something that I learned through learning about Islam. For example, the Prophet's uncle, who was a big help in his life, lived with him, fought with him, but never somehow accepted Islam, died a disbeliever. So, I mean, you have the examples in our religion, and you will see that, I mean, I can do my best, I can talk about it, I can tell my friends about it, I can promote it, but at the end, it's, you know, up to God if they, you know, find the right path and if they, you know, realize it.
I want to touch upon, coming back to here, I've spoken to a lot of people talking about what had happened during the war and whatnot, the aggression. And when I ask them at the end of all of this, does your religion teach you to hate someone because they're Christian or Serbian or Croatian? 100% all of them say no. And even many have said, we like to forgive, but no one's asking us for forgiveness, right? So if you can touch upon that, you know, that I just recently interviewed a Serb who actually accepted Islam. And you see how Islam transcends, because there's this misconception that if you become a Muslim, somehow you have to, like, you change your nationality.
Yeah.
But that's totally
a misconception, of course.
Can you touch upon that?
Yes, I mean, that's the problem of Balkan, I think, that people, Croats and Serbs and atheists and whatever, think that Islam is something for the Turks. And
are you
some
Turkish?
No,
you visited Turkey, right?
Yes, I went there, but
you're not Turkish.
I actually never explored my roots that far. I mean, maybe I am, I don't know. I don't actually care, you know.
Maybe some of them who are accusing in their DNA, they might be more Turkish.
Exactly, right? exactly. So they look on Islam through this, you know, filter of nationality, which, as of course, as we know, most of the people in the world are not Arabs. And no, they are not Turks. So, and especially in the West, where now Islam is growing rapidly, and that's also a misconception that we try to, you know, to
remove,
and to, you know, get rid of it, because it's you can have your nationality, whatever it is, and just accept the other religion. I mean, it's totally how should I say it? Totally normal.
Exactly.
To get to the other part of your question. After the war, I mean, we still live together here in Bosnia with Orthodox Christians, with Catholics, with atheists, with Jews also. Many people forget that Sarajevo is also one of the cities that, you know, accepted a lot of Jews after, you know...
About that. This is very important.
Yeah.
This is considered the Jerusalem of Europe, isn't it?
Yes, exactly.
We have like a mosque, a church and a synagogue in 20 meters distance, you know. And a lot of Jews from Andalus came after, you know, the Crusaders came back to Spain. They went, a lot of them went with the Muslims to Africa, and a lot of them came then to what's then Ottoman Empire, and they stayed here and they lived also in Yugoslavia. And the biggest community of Jews were here in Sarajevo.
Wow.
And they lived here until the war in the 90s. Then a lot of them went to Israel and, you know, moved maybe to Europe or whatever. But we still have a great community of Jewish people here in Sarajevo, so it's
living safe.
No, even now when this conflict in Israel with the Zionists is going on, you never saw like a problem here, you know, because we know to differentiate, because they're our neighbors. They are here. They are living with us in Sarajevo. They're Bosnians, and so another example is maybe a lot of people heard that in the war in the 90s. A lot of mosques were destroyed. For example, in my hometown, we had like six, Bielina, I was born in Bielina.
We had six mosques.
Demolished to the ground.
Like all six at the same time and same day, demolished, stones picked up and, you know, drove into a river and, you know. And on the other side, we have Sarajevo, which has like, I don't know how many churches, Orthodox, Catholics, synagogues. There was not like a window cracked. So that's the difference between, you know, Muslims and the other.
That's because of Islam.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because we were taught that also a church is like, it's our responsibility. Like in the times of Sahabas, you know, there were other, you know, religion communities, and you need to protect them. They are, you know, they're your neighbors. You live with them. It's your duty.
It's interesting because you see people projecting many things onto Islam, this hate and this violence, and they try to attribute these things to Islam, but they're projecting what they're doing. But you see a firsthand account, what you're saying here, when you study what happened here, the aggression. It's a very deep history. I think we don't even really study this back. People don't know what happened over here. So I think this is a shining example. And then the Jerusalem of Europe being here, and it's amazing. So much to learn. There's so much.
Yes, people should come visit Bosnia Sarajevo. I mean, we see a big increase of tourists every year, and it's cheap. The good food is good. You know, weather is nice. It's nice people. Everybody's welcome here. So everybody should come, explore, learn about it, and yeah.
Thank you, brother. Thank you for spending some time with us.
No problem. Thank you again. Like I said, it was an honor. And salam to all the viewers.
I cannot leave without giving you a gift. If you're not yet Muslim and you tune in to see what these Muslims are talking about and you like a free copy of the Quran, go ahead and visit thedeanshow.com. We'll take care of the postage and everything and get it delivered to you. And if you still have some questions about Islam, call us at 1-800-662-4752. We'll see you next time.